Welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Lumen. On this show, we talk to farmers and ranchers who aren't afraid to think for themselves and do things a little bit differently. We hope these guests will challenge you to look at your farms and ranches in a new way and result in a more profitable and enjoyable business for you and your family. Hello, and welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast. Today's guest is Noah Taylor, who's an individual I actually met. He kind of came up and visited our farm, and we got to talking and realized how he's doing some really cool things at his place down in Iowa, managing to graze almost year-round, feeding, I think, just 40 bales of hay to 150 cows this entire winter, or maybe that was last winter. Either way, feeding minimal hay in an upper Midwest environment, which is pretty impressive. And so I just thought I had to get him on the podcast and talk to him. So that's what we're going to talk to. That's who we're going to talk to today. And that's what we're going to talk about. But before we do that, I wanted to take a minute to talk about my sponsor, Barn to Door. Barn to Door is an all-in-one solution built for farmers to help manage your direct sales, both online and in person. We've actually been using them now for our meat marketing brand, Grass-Fed Cattle Company, for several years. And with Barn to Door, we've been able to build consistent, recurring cash flow with subscriptions to our farm products. But most importantly, Barn to Door has helped us to save time by simplifying order management. And if you're looking to get time back with your family while operating a successful farm business, I'd encourage you to check out Barn to Door. You can go to www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter, where you can learn more about our success. And if you choose to sign up, you'll get access to a free academy session, which has a $99 value. And again, the website is www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. With that, we'll dive into our conversation today with Noah Taylor. It's a good one. I really enjoyed it. But again, thank you all so much for listening. I so appreciate it. Thank you for sharing to whoever you might be sharing it with. Feel free to keep reaching out to me with podcast suggestions, comments, concerns, anything that you might have to help this podcast continue to be of higher quality and higher content for listeners, for you. So thank you so much again, and we'll dive into the conversation. Well, hey, Noah, thanks so much for joining me, and welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jared.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. When you were up here, we kind of had the opportunity to chat a little bit and learn about what you're doing down there, which to me sounds awesome. You're a fellow Midwesterner trying to make cattle work in an area where most people see pasture and cattle as wasteland and an unprofitable enterprise. So I was grateful that you were willing to hop on with me, and I'm looking forward to figuring out how you do that and how you make it work here in Iowa.
Yep.
Should be good. But maybe before we dive into what you're all doing now, did you grow up on a farm? Is your family history? Do you have a family history in agriculture? How far back do you go in your area there?
So in our area, I'm the fourth generation on some of the ground that we operate now. My family history in the county goes back to, we were some of the first settlers. The family left Dallas County in central Iowa and ended up going up to Minnesota. And then they basically starved up there and came back to family down here.
Sure.
And kind of started over in Dallas County. And so, yeah, I'm the fourth generation, born, raised, always wanted to farm. Just didn't know quite how I was going to do it. So,
yeah. When they started there four generations ago, do you know what the enterprise mix was? I mean, has that always been kind of corn and soybean country? Or?
Yeah, it was corn, soybean country. Back then, they were diversified, fed some cattle, had some hogs. Chickens were a big part of it. Kind of your basic 1930s, 1940s operation that you would sure. consider.
Yeah. No, cool. And back then, I guess most people were still probably full-time. I don't know if it was, I mean, have your family always been kind of full-time in farming, or has there been a history of off-farm work? And whatnot, or
For the most part, everyone's been full time. My mom, she worked on and off the farm a little bit, but for the most part, she worked on the farm most of my childhood.
yeah.
She's actually working at a school as a lunch lady just because she enjoys working with the kids so
Nice.
much now. So gives her
Cool.
another outlet, for
Yeah.
her. So
Something to
sometimes
do.
just dealing with me is too much.
I can
So
believe it. No, I'm just kidding. No, cool. So what does the farm look like today? What, as far as who's all there, how many generations, how many different people, different enterprises, whatnot?
currently it's pretty much me and my dad. We have a hired hand that's more of a partner. He's actually younger than me. He's picked up a few row crop acres, so he's farming with us. And then we have two sort of part-time hired hands that help us seasonally as we need it, and sometimes it turns into all the time. Just kind of depends what we have going on. As far as enterprises go, mostly corn and beans. We have a small feed lot. We feed 300, 400, 500 head a year, kind of depending on the markets and how we see things going and what we want for our workload. Then we also have a cow calf operation. We have a fall herd, which is a smaller herd. Usually we run 30 to 40 fall pairs. And then we have our spring herd, which is our main herd. And that range is a little bit, but somewhere around that 150 head mark. We also finish pigs for Nyman Ranch,
Oh, yeah.
which is a niche market. Probably several of your listeners have heard of it. Antibiotic free, deep bedding, lots of different protocols that we have to follow. And then dad has a small ewe flock that it's more of his hobby than anything. There's 30, 40 ewes in that.
Sure.
But it's kind of that's been kind of neat to transition to, trying to think how to say this. Transition. We used to, dad's sheep herd was pretty much his daily release, whatever. He'd want to go do chores with them every day and
Yeah.
take care of a sheep and feed a sheep. And we were just going through ungodly amounts of high quality hay
Yeah.
for these sheep that hardly made anything.
Yeah.
And finally, I got to the point where I was like, I'm tired of doing sheep chores for you.
Yep.
You're gone. Like, you're feeding way too much for them. They got to go. He's like, I just can't get rid of them. I was like, well, then let's figure out how we don't have to feed them,
Yeah.
And so now
Yeah.
we're they we've fed we fed everything during that really deep cold snap, but since then they've just kind of been on their own. It's amazing what a sheep can do,
That's
in any
awesome.
environment. So
Yeah. Well, it just takes somebody saying I'm sick of this to be able to finally make the change that makes life all that much more
yeah,
enjoyable. Yeah,
pretty
that's
much,
awesome. Good. Cool. So crops, some hogs, cattle, sheep. Was there anything else that I missed?
We have some landlords and other, deals where we make some hay. So I'm not really in the hay business. I don't really like putting up hay, but we do put up some hay. We do quite a bit of different cropping systems, I guess. My hobby is growing different things and figuring out different ways of doing things. And so we've grown several different crops. We've done yellow peas, dry yellow peas, field peas, like vegetable peas, grain sorghum, oats, wheat, canola. Gonna dabble in a little bit of flax.
Where are you marketing all that stuff?
Kind of all over, and some of it, if I don't have a market for it, we just feed it. That's kind of the easy out. I mean, I'm not doing large quantities yet, but
Sure.
sunflowers, we do sunflowers as well. Yeah. And
Can
there's,
you put some of that through the pigs?
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Pigs, cattle,
Sure.
just kind of however we best see fit.
Yeah.
Just
I
grind it up
gotcha.
a little bit and feed it.
Makes sense.
That my goal is not to, on a lot of it is not to, I'm doing it on a small scale
Yeah.
currently. So I'm not trying to really push profit.
Sure.
I want to see if these cropping systems can work. And yeah, so just kind of.
Do you see like soil health benefits, changes in the soil when you start doing something different and getting out of just straight corn and soybeans already, or has it been too small to really see much of a difference?
No, I mean, we're ill on some of them. Like, we'll have whole fields of sorghum. The sunflowers was a little bigger scale. The vegetable peas, that was pretty large scale. I would say yes, we get, there's a couple different benefits. One of the biggest ones is breaking up our weed cycles.
Sure.
And it's allowing us to use less herbicides. And I guess kind of the biggest gauge to me is following that pea crop. The last 3 years, those fields have been our highest yielders, for the most part. So it's, I would say definitely we're seeing an advantage to breaking up the corn soybean rotation and expanding those crop rotation cycles, whether it's peas or oats or whatever else I come with. We seem to see a response in the following corn and soybean crops.
Yeah, I've always wondered, heard people talk about like when you add a third rotation into a corn and soybean rotation, you can see like a, and I think I've heard of numbers even in like the 10 to 15%
Oh
bump
yeah.
in yields the following couple of years. And I mean, depending on the year, if you're talking to 15%, that's what, 30 bushels in corn, that's another $100 an acre. That's like a
Yep.
whole year's of net profit on an average year,
Yep.
maybe. And so if you can give up a year of crops but gain a whole bonus, essentially the profit of a bonus year with just your corn, and then the same thing with soybeans, pays for itself, not even including any potential grazing benefits you might get out of it on that third year itself.
Oh yeah. Yep. And then what we're trying to do is maybe even extend that beyond the third year and,
Yeah.
do a fourth year of something,
Sure.
just doing larger breaks. But yeah, we're seeing 10, 15% pretty consistently,
Wow.
no
Yield
matter.
bumps over something right
Yep.
next to it without
Yep.
that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd have to sit down and run economics on it,
Yeah.
but that's pretty darn cool. I mean, if the grazing crop or the third year crop, assuming you can graze it or something, can pay for its land rent and its seed costs, and just that's all it has to do for it to be a wash, really. But
Yeah, no, it's worked out really good for us. And then just the big thing that we're able to have with our diversity of the livestock is we can come back and really utilize, the residues, and if it
Yeah.
is an earlier season crop or even a late planted crop, we can adjust our grazings to harvest whatever potential is out there.
Yeah.
The extras, we're getting more than just, three crops in 3 years. We're getting almost sometimes four crops in 3 years plus two really solid years of grazing,
Wow.
residues. So.
Yeah. No, that's part of why I wanted to talk to you. I mean, even this year especially, I feel like the last few years when you look at, man, why are we running anything grazing across this ground when corn is $7 a bushel, looks pretty ridiculous. But now when you're looking, I mean, I've heard people say they're, talking about it right now, the way things look is 50 cents per bushel below cost of production is what they're looking at selling corn for in the next year or two. And we have flexibility where if they're in corn and soybeans, maybe they can do corn on corn for a year or something to do a little bit of a difference in rotation if it made sense. But We've got options. That's how I've always, look at the cattle with this is, especially with cattle prices where they're at, is we have options to do something different on the ground, and that's a lot more optim or a lot nicer when things are looking like they are these years, I guess. But
Yep, our operation is built to, we always seem to do better when prices are low, I guess is a way to put it. We have more buffers and more opportunities to generate revenue than your typical corn and soybean guy, which is there's in our county, there's three or four cow calf guys that are probably above 25 cows and a lot of smaller operations. But even the feedlot side in our area is shrunk or almost disappeared, I guess. So
Replaced by just crops, or did a lot of guys do hog finishing and poultry barns and stuff?
we're really not even a big hog finishing area. I would say for the most part, mostly just crops. We're really close to the Des Moines Metro. I'm about 20 minutes from it. It's just kind of hard for guys to invest in conventional hog barns and stuff when you have so much pressure from people wanting acreages and build houses. So
So is that, is that a real threat, you think? In 20 years, 30 years, you might have to move, kind of a threat, or
I don't know. I don't know. It's Waukee's one of, I think it for a while it was the fastest growing city in America. I think maybe it slowed down just a hair. I don't know. It's a blessing and a curse. I can tell you that it seems like it kind of creates a floor for our land prices around here. You can go north a ways and you can go west a ways, and for similar quality dirt, it just seems like it's just more affordable around here. You get so much 1031 money floating around that it's impossible to fight, really. I mean, there was a farm that sold for $144,000 an acre this winter to Microsoft, and so that guy was able to go 10 to 1, replacing ground.
Well, that's exactly it. And like one hand, we were talking about the photo behind you is a lot like the photo of mine. It's one of the kind of original aerial photographs of our farm from way back whenever and stuff. And it's like, we get a lot of history in these places. So I always hate the idea of somebody being forced to move out, but I really struggle to feel bad when they can, three to one, four to one, 10 to 1, their land base elsewhere. It's like, yeah, that's not great, but that sounds
Yeah,
pretty nice.
you almost hit the lottery, but at
Yeah,
the same
exactly.
time, for some of these families that have been around forever,
Yeah.
it's kind of sad watching their farm places disappear,
For
but
sure. Yeah. No, most definitely. Yeah. But no, it's interesting. I mean, we've kind of in a populated area, but I think we're protected a ways a while from super urban pressure, but we'll see where my lifetime goes. A lot can change in a little while, it seems like. But the cattle, I guess, well, actually, before that, you mentioned something in your kind of introduction that piqued my interest that I wanted to ask you more about. And maybe it's not something you're comfortable sharing, that's fine. But you talked about this employee who's kind of an employee slash partner. He brought some acres to the table and you kind of farmed together. That's something that's intrigued me as a way, I think, in agriculture, a lot of times we maybe can't pay the best salaries. I think it's pretty comparable or pretty obvious when you compare to like a seed company. I know when I graduated, I could have had an awesome job with a company truck, great benefits, great pay, and I chose to farm because it was a family farm. But a lot of people who, it's not even their family might not be that interested. And the idea of working with someone like that, maybe help them get some acres or something, is maybe an appealing way to get some skin in the game and get some retention of employees and not lose them all the time. And I was wondering if you might talk a little bit about how that came to be and what that structured agreement looks like and if that you think is important to employee retention.
Yep. So Austin is, he's been working for us for, gosh, I think this is probably his third year now. He kind of started towards the end of his college career. We connected and he had worked for a couple other smaller farmers in the area. And at the time, me and dad were kind of almost doing too much. And there's instances where, during harvest, you kind of need a third guy.
Sure.
Working calves, you need a third guy. We,
Yeah.
the way our operation's set up, we kind of need to have three people at times. Basically, we offered him a job, and he's from town, a small town. Was an FFA, never really, wasn't a farming background per se, but he really enjoyed farming, and I think it's what he wants to do. It was just, he was looking for an opportunity to, one, work for a farmer, but also, I think he wanted to get his feet wet and actually get some skin in the game, like you said. So,
Sure.
kind of our arrangement is we pay his salary, and then I've helped him find some farms to rent. He's picked up a couple on his own, and just we let him use the equipment. We work together, get it all done. I could never afford someone of his talent and, capabilities, and
Sure.
he's good with machinery, he's good with livestock, he's an all around
Yeah.
good farmer. But I even the local co-ops, pretty much anyone could probably offer just as much or maybe even more than what we could. But what they can't offer is the opportunity, and that's what
Yeah.
we're able to
Yeah.
give him. And I so far I think he likes it. He's hung around, done a good job. He picked up some more farms this year. For instance, this last year there was a farm that ended up selling for four or five different acreages. They split it up, and of course they'd like someone to farm it until they got their house built or whatever.
Sure.
And it was a farm like that where, I've got other landlords that I want to take care of, but here's, a set of four different landlords that you go ahead and take over this farm, and
Sure.
it's yours. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Huh. So couple questions off of that more. If it, are you okay talking about? I don't
Yeah.
know how much
Yeah,
that
go
is
ahead.
something you want to share, but is there a certain point, and I don't know what, do you have a financial agreement with like the equipment? Does there like you hit this many acres and you got to start paying this price, or we're just you charging custom rates for his use of equipment, and how does that?
So basically we've told him that, your bonus is able to use the equipment.
Sure.
We've talked about when he gets established and maybe starts growing and picking up better
Yeah.
farms, and things start going well for him, that he could maybe invest in some equipment or,
Sure.
step up in different ways in the
Yeah.
operation. That's kind of the way we have it structured. And like
Sure.
if I have some leftover seed or something, I give it to him, or
Yeah.
just different things like
Sure.
that. But I
No, that
mean, even what I give him sometimes doesn't feel like, it's enough compensation for what
Yeah.
how good a help he is. So
Sure. No, that makes sense. I didn't know if all of a sudden he comes to you and says, "Hey, I picked up 2,000 acres," and all of a sudden you gotta, yeah. I mean, that's a pretty significant value in equipment use, but I'm sure that you can cross that bridge when you come to it. But
well, and having a partner like him, I mean, he understands the business side of it, and
sure.
we trust each other. I mean,
Yeah,
we're
not
not
taking
going to bail
advantage of
on
each other.
him. He's not
Yeah.
going to pull a fast one on us. I
Sure.
mean,
Yeah.
we're in a real good understanding.
That's cool.
I mean, if he could pick up 2,000 acres, more power to him. But
Yeah.
that's
Might have to have some
yeah.
conversations about what that'll look like, but
Yeah. Maybe he could pay me, that'd be fine.
there you
But
go. There you go. Awesome. And then the other question is like, how do you deal with, or have you had to deal with, like, say that farm comes up that you'd both really like, who gets it then, and what does that look like, buying or renting?
I guess we really haven't crossed that bridge yet.
Sure.
I would probably, the farms that I've been able to rent lately, have been farms that I've been not necessarily working towards, but I've established relationships with these landlords over time, and they don't know
Yeah.
Austin, so it was just
Sure.
easier for me
Yeah.
to step into that role. But yeah, I think if we would go after the same farm, I think we'd go after it together. That's where I could see it going, and
That's awesome.
that'd be even better. I'd rather have him as a full-time
Yeah.
partner rather than a full-time employee. I
Yeah.
mean,
I
that's
like that.
but we got to get, I mean, it's just starting out, so we got to
Yeah.
get to that
Yeah,
point.
he's got to bring some value to the table too. Yeah.
I mean, I've only been farming since 2017, 18, so
Okay.
I mean, I'm still trying to get my feet under myself too,
Sure.
so
Yeah.
it's
Same here. No, I know
we're
how that
both
goes.
trying to do it, so
Cool. No, thank you. I appreciate you going into that just because it caught my ear, because it's something I've thought a lot about, is something a good way to try and get people engaged. And yeah, you can't go out and compete with the big guys on salaries, but maybe you can offer something different. Just like you said, you can offer opportunity that those companies can't. And I was curious to get the details on that. So thank you.
yeah, and even some of the larger farms I know that do it, and some of them have great relationships, but some of them say, well, yeah, you can rent this farm, but then you got to pay
Yeah.
X amount to use my equipment and
Yeah.
stuff like that. And
Yeah.
I know, I hope that if we can help him get started, that at some point it's really gonna
Yeah.
offer a good return to us. So
Totally. Sounds like it. The right, I've heard people say you can, it's awfully hard to overpay the right person, but it's real easy to overpay the wrong person, kind of a thing and stuff. So sounds like a good fit. But moving to the cow side a little bit. Maybe talk a little bit about what your philosophy is with your cow calf production model, I guess, and what that looks like in practice in your context.
So on the cow side, when I came home from college, in 2017, we were right around 20 head, I'd say. I mean,
Okay.
just basically your small. We had one farm that we ended up buying that had 30 acres of pasture, and that's kind of where it all started.
Yeah.
We were doing the row crop, and we needed to have something to eat the grass. I guess from there, we had a farm that was, it was still a really good farm, but it was kind of cut up with waterways, had some sandier soils. It was still a good farm, but we kind of wanted to protect that a little bit more. So we went ahead and started seeding down 20, 30 acres to perennial every year, until we got to where we wanted to go with that. So yeah, we ended up seeding down more, started growing the herd a little bit. At the time, I would say we were probably feeding, winter feeding pretty heavy. We were haying a lot, because our rotations or our acres and rotations didn't quite match up to the number of cows we had. So when I came home, probably one of my biggest goals was to get the cow herd to a number where I feel like we could effectively graze the acres we had.
Sure.
And so I, truth be told, I ended up buying kind of whatever I could afford at the sale barn, whether, right or wrong. A lot of it didn't work out. Some of them really worked out. So there's really no, we really liked red cows, red Angus cows.
Good.
To kind of get the numbers where I needed to go, I partnered with a local seed stock guy, and we ended up raising purebred Angus bulls and heifers for him, kind of on a, it was a crop share type lease.
Sure.
It's how that deal worked out, where he provided the cows, I provided a lot of the resources, and then we split the calf crop in the end. I don't know. I probably wouldn't do that again if I was a young guy starting out, but
Okay.
it was a way to get going, I
Yeah.
guess.
Well, it's a
Get
lot of
cows in.
capital, look at buying your own herd to
It
start. I mean,
was. It
Huge
was,
dollars.
starting anytime a beginning farmer starts with zero, it's really hard to get, anywhere. It seems like it takes time and it takes a little bit of work. But I was grateful for the opportunity. It worked out, worked out well enough. But I think, after listening to some of your podcast, like custom grazing was never in my mind, things like that. I just wanted cows of my own, basically. And this was a way to at least have a share of it. So.
Makes sense. So kind of more, definitely more high input, that type, the cows you're raising for that seed stock guy, kind of larger frame, bigger, higher input cattle.
Higher input, Angus cattle. I mean, really, phenotypically, they're beautiful, just beautiful to look at, just your just what you would consider a typical picture. They're picture perfect was a way to put it. But I mean, we were putting in, like, we only had 25 cows or so with him, 25, 30, and we were putting in days and nights checking calves. We were pulling calves. It just seemed like, the more work we put into it, the harder it got, and the more work we'd have to do to catch up. It was just a constant battle. We were calving in mostly February, I guess, and of course, the AI date would be the day where there was one day, I think my thermometer got to like negative 29 or something that morning, and I had 16 calves due. I mean, it was a challenge. Learned a lot. Learned that that's what I didn't want to do. I guess I would rather be hands off, let the cows do the work for me, not the other way around. And that's kind of where we've taken it from where we started, I
So,
guess.
where did you learn that? Because I mean, everybody does it. Well, not everybody. Most people do what you were doing. They probably deal with the same struggles and the same challenges, but most just keep doing it. For some reason, you thought there might be something different. What? Why? Where did that come from?
So I went to Northwest Missouri State down in Maryville, Missouri, and while I was down there, I worked for a local farmer that had a cow calf herd, and I picked up a lot of different things from him. They weren't necessarily, no feed over the winter type deals. I kind of learned different management tactics from him. And then even with our own herd, because while we had the seed stock herd, we still had our 20, 25 cows of our own. And at times they seemed, I obviously didn't pour the same resources into them that I was the other herd, but it seemed like we were having, better conception rates, or our weaning percentage was the same or higher. I had two herds side by side, and the one that I spent the least amount of time with and the least resources on just seemed to be doing better. And you'd start looking at that, and then on top of that, I started listening to some different podcasts and reading different things, and just I started personally pushing the cows a little bit, less feed every year, which I also have screwed up too. But we just went down that route, and now with, we're running 180 head of pairs. It seems like we're probably doing less work than what we were with just 25 even. I mean, just way less chores, way less time invested. So,
No. Hey, Kit, bull sale season is coming up shortly. Was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about the Colorado sale.
Colorado sale will be our third and final sale. It'll be Monday, April 15th. It'll be in Burlington, Colorado. That's the first town in Colorado on Interstate 70. We've got a great lineup here: 136 Angus bulls, 38 red Angus bulls. These bulls can be delivered all the way back to the West Coast, all the way to Canada, all the way down into Texas. This is our Colorado sale on Monday, April 15th.
That's awesome. Yeah, and so growing the cow herd was, I mean, was that something that you thought was going to be possible the way you were doing it before, or was it just kind of almost you didn't really see it as a real, the cow calf was just kind of a side non-profitable enterprise like most people look at it maybe?
So where I decided that we needed to grow the cow calf herd is we really started pushing our winter corn stalk grazing
Sure.
and even winter cover crop grazing, and we started to see just how little we could feed.
Yeah.
And looking at that, we kind of decided we need to utilize some of these resources that we have better. And that's where the
Sure.
expansion of the cow herd really started for us. We
Yeah.
were like, we're leaving all these corn stalks out. You know, we have some fences. Why aren't we grazing more?
Yeah.
So we went with
Well,
the cow calf route.
yeah. Well, that's huge because that is a huge advantage that you've got. I mean, you said you're mainly cropping, so you have lots of crop acres, lots of residue. And I mean, that's been the key to us making cows make any sort of sense up here is the ability to we have to lease a lot of corn stock ground, but if you've got access to it, especially if you have fence or water nearby, that's huge. So
Yeah, we have probably we're pushing 1,100 acres of row crop ground that's fenced,
wow.
with a majority of it has pretty good water.
That's
We're
awesome.
it seems like every 2 or 3 years we find a way to fence another 80 and
Yeah.
just keep adding to it.
Yeah.
That's
Man.
kind of the next segment of where we want to go. I think our cow herd's kind of where we want it to be. I mean, it
Sure.
might fluctuate a little bit, but we really like to graze corn stalks or at least put some livestock back out there in any way, shape that we can. I
Yeah.
think our next step, which we've started doing, is either feeding cattle out on corn stalks, or I think we're going to go more for like a backgrounding situation on some acres
Sure.
just to keep growing and keep utilizing what we
Yeah.
got.
Yeah. Well, it's just so much feed. Like,
Yeah.
it's just so much feed. I mean, the fact we feed less hay than we did 10 years ago when we were feeding 100 less cows because
Yep.
we are grazing on these stocks and stuff. It's unbelievable. So, what does that look like, I guess, for your grazing season? Talk about maybe, just walk through a year in a grazing season, I guess, at your place.
So, starting in the spring, we pretty much try to calve. We calve in April and May. We try to calve out on corn stalks or bean stubble or whatever's available. Let the cool season pastures kind of get a little head start. We then we'll rotate into those. We actually have on our main farm, we have 130 acres divided into like 16, 17 paddocks that I can also cross divide as well to double that if we need to. And then we have a couple other pastures too. We're kind of spread out on our pasture footprint a little bit, but we'll graze, you know, till either we run out of grass or we don't overgraze.
Yeah.
I would rather what we do have the flexibility to do is we try to, you know, put an early season crop like oats or peas or something we can come back in with a cover crop or any sort of forage crop after to kind of use as a relief if we need to on the pastures. So we'll go through grazing that. Then once we get started with corn and bean harvest, as soon as we get a field opened up, usually we open the gates and let them go. We'll graze that for, it's kind of, how do I want to say it? It's a, you just do it long enough, you kind of can judge the cow's body condition and how they're doing, and you know what you can push and what you can't push. So we try to graze corn stalks early enough after harvest that they can get the most value out of them, especially if it's a wet fall or something. From there, usually we'll rotate into some sort of stockpiled forage, whether it's sorghum Sudan or like a millet mix. Usually those crops are following like either a forage oat or a grain oat, or even the peas will come back. That'd kind of be your January, February time frame, when we go into that. And then from there, can either go back to corn stalks, go to a different corn stalk field. We've got a little bit of flexibility there to do what we want, where we think it'll best work out. And about this April time frame, we're back to grazing rock, basically, as start to get a little bit of growth and they start going after that. I mean, don't get me wrong, we still, depending on the cow and what she is and what stage she's in, I mean, we will feed a little bit, not much. I think on our 180 so cows, the fall herd, I did feed a little bit more, just because I've learned we can't starve those cows, I guess. But that was one of my biggest mistakes, is I tried to push a fall herd too hard and it just does not work out. I mean, you just can't do it. And I think I've heard a lot of people have experiences with that. But
It makes sense.
that fall herd just takes so much feed, to get anywhere with them. But anyway, on the spring cows, we've fed, I want to s like 30, almost 40 bales of hay across 150 cows. I mean, that's all we've done.
Yeah, that's
We give
incredible.
a little bit of distillers here and there, just kind of as a protein supplement, right or wrong. Keeps them coming to us. Easy way to check them. I know
Well, there's
some people.
nothing wrong with a little bit of protein supplement if they're grazing trash in the winter and you're getting by
Yeah.
without feed. I don't see any problem with that, and we'll get to it, I guess. I've got questions on each stage. Don't let me forget to ask about when you wean and when that looks like. But starting in the spring, you said you're calving out on cropland, essentially. Mud, I mean, is mud an issue? Do you plan to do some tillage on that? I'm not sure what your cropping enterprise looks like as far as tillage, no-till, but how does that impact cropping acres?
So we are able to do any sort of practice that we need to when it comes to tillage. I prefer no-till. We're mostly no-till. We have the equipment to come in and do some tillage if we need to. Honestly, with corn stalks, we've had pretty good luck coming straight in behind them, and we will plant beans as we're calving out there. You just
With
you
them
got
in the field. You
with
just
them in the
honk a little
field.
bit and get them to move on your way.
And just make sure you don't run over any of them. We haven't, but sometimes you do have to stop and get out and move them out of the way, those young calves. But
That's funny.
we plant right into the into those corn stalks. And yeah, where we feed a little bit, or the water areas, you will have a little higher traffic, but 98% of the field is perfectly fine to go plant in. I'm not really worried about compaction. It hasn't seemed to really affected us too much. Our best farms are the farms that we have fenced and we can do this type of grazing on. So year in, year out, our highest yields come off of those farms. I get, and when it comes
That's
to
incredible.
so the last Oh, 2 days we've had an inch and a half, and we've been calving in it. Some of the sale barn cows that I bought, they calved a little early, which is fine, part of it. But most of the calves you get above that day old, they're able to really handle it pretty well. I will run out there, and if I think a calf's cold, I'll break a straw bale and kind of warm it up a little bit, lay it on somewhere dry just for a little bit,
Sure.
and usually they pop right up and get going. So
Yeah.
really hasn't
Awesome.
been that much of an issue.
Yeah. And I guess as far as the calving logistics itself, you're a commercial guy. Are you take you're not are, do you tag? Are you doing records? How much hassle and labor do you have in your actual calving process?
Well, in the spring herd, we still tag. In the fall herd, I don't tag those anymore. I don't know. I'm out there anyway. I'm right by the calf.
Yeah.
I just
Sure.
figured I'll go ahead and throw a tag in it
Yeah.
while I'm doing it. So.
Sure. And do you have much like, well, since they're out in the field, you're not bedding and you don't
Nope.
have feed for the most part, a little bit occasionally, maybe some distillers, but have much calving troubles out there? Yeah.
Nope. And we try to, if we do have a feeding area, we try to get that away from the water area.
Sure.
And, we make the cows move. I mean,
Yeah.
they're walking, most of them are probably walking, I don't know, 2 miles a day when you think about it. When you watch
Yeah.
where they move across the field, I mean, they're constantly going around in circles and,
Yeah.
all over. I think that's a big part of, why we don't have problems is just the amount
Yeah.
of exercise that these cows get.
Yeah. I don't know what exactly it is, but yeah, when we moved from March calving and we did a lot more in a shed and stuff to May calving out on the grass, we had a lot of issues go down too. So something about that movement and exercise definitely makes things easier and better. So moving into summer, well, I guess, is there anything else in calving that you can think of worth mentioning?
Kind of one thing that you don't really think about when we were calving, earlier in February and March,
Yeah.
just the amount of manure that we
Yeah.
would have to haul
Yeah.
and the cost associated with hauling that. Manure by the hour, or hauling manure by the hour is probably the most expensive, or probably the second most expensive operation that we have. It's behind harvest,
Yeah.
but pretty much
Oops.
it's before planting, before spraying. I mean,
Yeah.
it's a time-consuming, equipment-consuming
Yeah.
operation. Being able to cut that out in our cow-calf herd and cut that out of our feedlot when we're, grazing, or we're feeding out on stocks or backgrounding out on stocks is probably one of the biggest advantages that we have, I
Yeah.
think.
No. I'm glad you mentioned that because that's probably one of the least mentioned but biggest benefits, like you're saying. I remember we used to bed pack as well a lot over winter with cows outside still, but a bed pack, we're always not only the actual winter work, we're constantly having to bed corn stalks and stuff, but that, yeah, we would haul for what seemed like weeks every spring to get it all pulled back out and everything like that, and we had so many more breakdowns. Yeah, it was a big job that now it's so easy to just feed, much easier to haul the feed out to them than to haul that manure all back out in the spring in a short period of time. So.
Last spring, I spent probably 2 weeks. It was a really crappy spring, hauling manure from the feedlot out. And this spring, we had it all done in about 3 hours. I
Wow.
mean, just
Yeah.
amazing the difference by
Yeah.
just having those animals out
That's awesome.
doing the work for you. So.
So cool. Yeah. Cool. No, so moving into summer then, you talked about you've got your grass footprint is spread out a little ways. We are as well. I think we talked about this when you were up here and we've got pasture on eight different sites and cows all over the place and I don't know what your setup is, but how does that work logistically and how have you found to make that somewhat reasonable to manage?
So we have the home farm, and then we have a pasture that's roughly, oh, like 17, 18 miles away to the north. We have another pasture that's 12 to 13 miles west. And then I have a couple other little ones that are scattered around. One's 20 miles to the south. So we're really spread out. Logistically, I guess it kind of works for us. A lot of these fields or a lot of these pastures, they have crop ground associated with them too. So I will seed down part of the crop ground to like a oat or something that I can come back and graze later. And I do that intentionally because I kind of push the pasture a little bit. I make sure that I'm utilizing it to its full capacity. And then when I get to that point, then I can turn them out to whatever supplemental forage grazing I got. I guess I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it too, you talked about how late summer, a lot of times when you're burning through your pasture, you might move to some other cropland with different stuff. And I didn't know how you balance that on places that are so far away. Are you hauling them all home? Or it sounds like you might just do some right there if you got some
Nope.
cropland with it.
Nope. I'll do it right next to the pasture on
Yeah.
most of it.
It's perfect.
Some of the pastures where I don't have that option, I won't push those pastures as hard. The further away pastures have been, I've tried to more utilize those for the fall herd, just because then you don't have the issues of calves trying to get out everywhere and
Absolutely.
a little less demanding on the cows as far as their nutritional requirements go, so you
Yeah.
can stretch things a little bit further. So,
Yeah. Makes sense. And how much management are you doing on those pastures? And does it vary from close to home pastures to 20 miles away pastures?
the close to home pasture, we're out there. I try to get out there every day. We're probably moving every 3 days, I would say, rotating around, sometimes more, sometimes less. Kind of judge how the grass is doing and what we need
Yeah.
to do that way. The further pastures, we will still rotate a little bit. The one I'm still getting set up for rotational grazing, so this will probably be the first year that we really start that down there. We'll see how that goes. I'm hoping at least weekly moves, maybe more if we can do it. The really far away pastures where the fall pairs are, it's kind of more of a monthly move, I guess. I have
Yeah.
it split up how I can with the water availability there. So I just kind of move them as I can, I
Yeah.
guess, best way to
No.
put that.
No, it makes sense. We're same way. We don't move the ones as far in our 13-mile away pastures as much as we do the ones at home. It just from a labor efficiency, it just doesn't the benefits don't pay for the extra hassle. Probably you can't spend
Yeah.
all summer driving 20 miles one way and whatever miles the other way.
And with some of these pastures, my goal is, I mean, we won't move. Hopefully we get to the point where we don't have to move them and they can just be there all year or close by to there without having to come home. We can just
Sure.
have a cow herd down there, a cow herd up here, and
Yeah.
just utilize the corn stalks and stuff down there to
Oh,
our full
sure.
extent. And
Like
then,
year round, never have to move back and forth from farm to farm. Okay.
cut down there. So,
Yeah. Well, if you're not hauling feed, it's a lot easier to manage multiple groups. Like if you got to make any sort of feeding source, you don't want to have to feed in multiple places and have equipment for feeding in multiple places. And you sound like you've gotten it to where the feeding is pretty minimal. So that's awesome. That'd be so nice. Man, awesome. Jealous. I shouldn't say I'm jealous. I gotta figure out how to do it here. That's what I gotta
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, don't get me wrong, I'm still learning. I'm still trying to figure out what best works for us and
do.
how to best incorporate some of these practices into these farms and how they're set up. My favorite thing is a combination pasture row crop farm, just because there's so many different things that you can do with it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you look at Do you somehow write like expense the stocks to the cows? Or, I mean, you see maybe the cows, I think you mentioned where you run the cows are some of your highest yielding spots too. So maybe the cows need to be charging the crop farm for some sort of a service here, and it's just a, or it's just a wash, or how do you, I don't know, allocate that?
Yeah, I guess I kind of just treat it as a wash. If you factor, feed saved or, feed per day, it really starts to add up. Iowa State has their basic corn stock rental rates, which you can use too when you're factoring what goes to which enterprise. The way I kind of look at it is if the whole farm's, being profitable, we're raising all boats, it's a benefit, whichever enterprise you give the profit to.
Totally.
So.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Cool. All right. So moving then to fall, that was the question I wanted to come back to here is you get them on stocks as early as you can. Are you weaning calves at that point? When do you wean calves? Do you need to supplement the cows if they're on stocks, lactating still with calves at side? How do you make that work?
We wean shortly before or shortly after they get turned out to stocks.
Okay.
Usually there's enough, dropped ears or kernels out there on that first kind of graze out that I don't usually worry too much about a lactating cow. We'll
Sure.
get and we're planning on getting the calf off of there as soon as possible. So
Yeah.
for the most part, we're just grazing a drying cow or a dry cow on
Sure.
corn stalks. So,
Okay. Yeah, oh, that makes sense. And what do you do with the calves at that point? Do you typically wean and sell them right away? Or I guess you have your own feedlot, probably for
we
your
feed
cows.
everything that we raise. We kind of use those calves that we raised, and you could say we leverage them and add more to them, like in kind, and that's what we'll feed out, whether it's a spring or fall herd. We do it both times or both 2 times a year, basically. Yeah, so they go home and pretty much straight into the feedlot. I think we're going to transition more to maybe running them on stocks as well, just to offer a better environment for them.
Makes sense. Awesome. Okay. And then winter, we've talked about. Cool. No, that's pretty cool. So yeah, you're feeding 40 bales through the winter occasionally. Do you have any infrastructure set up to actually feed DDGs efficiently, or is it just pails in the
Buckets.
truck?
Yep. Buckets in a truck. Yep.
Okay.
I will say with some of these, like with the oats and stuff, we're set up to chop as well. So we will chop oats, we'll chop forage sorghum, whatever we don't need for the grazing side of it. We have the ability to harvest it. We could bale it too. We
Sure.
kind of prefer chopping just to avoid net wrap and all the hassles that come with hay. We can feed that to cows. We like on these cows that we are calving now, they are getting a little bit of silage and a little bit of silage and oatage, I guess is a way to put it. But for the most part, yeah, we're the only reason I'm really doing that now is because we had these early calvers that I'm having to kind of take care of until the rye gets going.
No, that makes sense. And I suppose you've got all the feeding equipment and everything for the feedlot, so it doesn't really matter what form the feed comes in, if it's hay or chopping or chop. Okay.
We probably have more equipment than really an average row crop guy or a average cow calf guy does, but it allows us to do a lot of different things. So
With the feedlot, that I don't, it's interesting. That's a good point. Yeah, you have more than the average cow calf or the average crop guy because you have the feedlot. Have you run numbers to see, like, as an independent enterprise, if the feedlot carrying all those overheads is, justifies it because you could make do without it, or
It depends on the year. I mean, the feedlot has been really profitable at times, and at the other times you're lucky to get your first cost back out of it. It's kind of all how you manage your risk and stuff like that. One of the reasons that we kind of feed out our own cattle is we were into the Red Angus side of things, and there was a time period through there where it was kind of hard to sell anything that wasn't black,
Sure.
you know. So
Yeah.
at the calf side, and we were having more success selling fat cattle at that point, so
Yeah.
that's the way we went. But
Yeah.
yeah, and
No,
the
that makes
and
sense.
having the means to do different things like that, like having the feedlot, we harvest quite a bit of earlage, so we're getting out into some of the stock fields earlier,
Sure.
cornfields earlier,
Yeah.
so we can get earlier grazing if we
Yeah.
need to. Same side with the silage too. So
Yeah. Huh. It's actually pretty cool. All the symbiotic, symbiosis between all the enterprises that you can kind of bounce off each other. And yeah, it would be interesting to see how each one would stand alone independently, but it's hard to, it's really hard when they are so integrated like that, that, as long as, like you said, if the operation as a whole is moving forwards, then that's a good thing. Why
I
pick?
think I'd like to probably transition more to a backgrounding type operation instead of a full-fledged finishing operation.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's what we're set up to do. It's what we know how to do. I mean, feeding cattle isn't for the faint of heart. It can be challenging at times. You only got four buyers if you're lucky, four, five, six buyers. I mean,
Yeah.
you're lucky. And sometimes you don't even have two or one, you know.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, during COVID, we'd have to beg to get a bid, you know. It's probably my least fun. The least fun job on the farm is marketing fat cattle. It's
Yeah.
just, I don't know, it's just hard to do.
Yeah. I think I asked you this when you were here, but I'm curious again, if you don't mind ask or me asking anyways, you market hogs through Nyman Ranch. Is there a reason why you're not marketing your beef as well with them?
One, their program is for black-hided animals.
Oh, really?
And we like our red cows.
Yeah.
We've started using a few more black bulls to get some more black-hided animals just because they're easier on the selling fats that way. But that was one turn off. And then when you run the numbers for not using implants and other things like that, it just didn't really fit into where we wanted to go with the beef side of thing. Nothing
Sure.
against their program,
No,
but
yeah.
just, I don't know. It's also, you know, we're so diversified on the livestock and the crop side that I don't know if I'd necessarily want to get full-fledged invested into one company.
Yeah.
Having them buy, you know, two different species might be a lot of risk that
Sure.
one doesn't realize. So
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I've never done the math, but it's interesting, like the it seems great. Get a premium for antibiotic free, growth hormone free, and all that stuff. But those things serve a purpose too. And if now you've reduced your, that's the whole rancher for profit theme of improved gross margin per unit, not just you might be increasing your gross product by adding value to your animal, but you've reduced your production or you've increased your gross cost or your total cost because it's taking you longer and more all of the other expenses and stuff. So, yeah, it's not just as simple as, oh, I can get 15 cents or whatever the premium is, more here. There's a whole bunch of things that go into it. You're set up to do one way, that's what you know. And the diversification of markets is not a bad thing to be diversified there. So makes a lot of sense. Cool. So going forward, do you see things that you still need to change? Do you see, I mean, I think you mentioned you're kind of content with the cow herd number where it's at, but what do you see as the future of the farm as a whole, cow calf and all the enterprises? Any thoughts on going forward? Put you
That's
on
a
the
good
spot.
question.
Yeah. Maybe you're there. Maybe you have reached the pinnacle of farming and we this podcast will be the solution.
No. I wish it was that way, but
Yeah.
you know, as a young, hungry farmer, there's always room to do something more.
Yeah.
I think we are in a pretty good spot for where we were 4 or 5 years ago, even. But I think we're gonna keep. I could see us expanding the cow herd a little bit just to take some rougher row crop acres out of row crop production and into a perennial forage, being able to utilize that a little bit more. But I think as an operation, I think, like I've kind of alluded to before, I think we're really gonna maybe lean more towards backgrounding a couple groups of cattle, utilizing more of our feedstuffs that we produce to, buffer the cow production side, just a better way to utilize some of those acres up. If that makes sense. I don't know. We're labor wise, we're kind of, I want to say we're kind of tapped out for where we need to be. We feed about 2,400 head of pigs a year, four different groups. Then with the cows and the feedlot and the row crop side, I mean, we're not turning away ground if it comes our way, but we also lose ground too. It just, kind of ebbs and flows with how things go. I think the more acres that we can graze residues or graze alternative crops or do alternative crops, the better off we'll be. We just gotta be careful to balance that and make sure we have the right marketing opportunities for some of those crops as we move forward. So
See, you've got like four main enterprises, it sounds like cow calf, feedlot, hogs, and crops. And I'm not missing any of them there. What are your thoughts overall on diversification? And I mean, is it a good thing? Do you sometimes think, gosh, we should just, scrap this or these two and just focus on this, cow calf and crops or whatever that is? I mean, how do you feel about the idea of diversification and what that's meant to your operation?
Well, believe it or not, I was actually more diversified. I did a bunch of custom
Oh, really?
work, basically. We decided to cut that just from a labor standpoint. So I think you can get to a point where you do too much. But I think where we're at, by focusing on these enterprises that can balance each other and also add value to each other, it makes us stronger as a whole. Feeding When we feed cattle, we basically just assume the price of corn that we charge the feeding operation basically gets charged what the local ethanol pr corn price is, and that's without the freight. We're saving the freight plus getting that basis improvement. So we're constantly adding value through all these different enterprises, and it helps us weather some of these economic storms, I guess, as they come and go.
For
So
sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. It's super, super valuable to have that. That's cool. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Is there anything else that you think overall that's worth sharing from what y'all are doing and what you've learned?
you gotta, be willing to try lots of different things, and you just never quite know what's gonna work out in your favor. Sometimes there's unexpected consequences and unexpected benefits. One thing we haven't really talked about is I've done some experimenting slash we are doing it on 60-inch corn. So we're able to, grow some more forage and yet still get economic return, off of those acres, get some cash flow and still have that grazing on those same acres, and not a little bit of grazing, but a bunch of grazing. I think there's still opportunity out there for the right person looking to do that type of thing, I guess.
Now, if somebody could figure that out, I mean, if the average ration is over $2 a day for somebody to feed them and they can get a nice quality ration of cover, a green
Oh
cover
yeah.
blended with a corn stalk, that's Like our cows, we make them eat corn stalks alone, and they can make that work, and we get them by all winter. But the average cow maybe can't do that. But if you can get a good, radish, whatever, some green with the corn stalks, that can be
Yeah.
some beautiful feed and reduce cost a lot. And that'd be huge opportunity for somebody. Great point.
Yeah, and there's more, when you start looking at different type of relay cropping, there's more opportunities out there for this type of thing and being able to utilize acres for both cash flow and then grazing on the backside or even grazing on the front side, better than what we are doing now. So
Sure. Oh, that makes sense. So what are two, three, four resources that can be anything, books, podcast, conference, whatever that has been valuable to you that you think would be worth somebody checking out if they want to learn too.
a lot of the books that I've read have come off of your podcast. So kind of reiterating all
Nice.
those like Allen Nation books, Gabe
Yeah.
Brown books,
Sure.
those are good. Practical Farmers of Iowa, they have a lot of resources, whether it's trials or field days that you can go to. A lot of them are based in Iowa and they kind of expand into surrounding states, but you can also get on their website and read through all their information that they have. The Extension Service, they have a lot of really good resources to look at. Our Extension Service in the state of Iowa, they've kind of, put out resources on swath grazing, and there's more than just your typical production practices that they look into, just better things like that. What else? Another resource that I think is good for people is having friends or local farmers, local ranchers that are in your environment that you can bounce ideas off, both good and bad, and get feedback from those people.
No, I don't think there's probably one much more valuable than that.
Yep.
Cool. So, where can people find you if they have questions, want to reach out, learn more about what you're doing, come see it, or something like that? Is there anywhere people can find you or?
Twitter would probably be the best place to find me. I'm on Facebook too, but I don't post much on there.
Sure.
I think my Facebook username is Noah Taylor 76. Yeah, at Noah Taylor 76.
That's
So
your Twitter.
yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well,
Yep.
thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was awesome. I know when we talked last, I was like, oh, this is exactly the kind of person I need to get to know because there's not a lot of people trying to do this at any sort of a scale in the Midwest here. And you're a little further south, but I don't know if I just we got to do more what you're doing. So I appreciate you coming on, sharing it. And I know other people are going to get value from it too. So thanks, Noah.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
The Herd Quitter Podcast is brought to you by Faro Cattle Company, whose mission is to help ranchers put more fun and profit into their business. You can get more information on Faro Cattle Company at farocattle.com. And if you enjoy what you've heard on this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Herd Quitter Podcast or at herdquitterpodcast.com.